Welcome to Speaking Truth to Empire on 88.1 KFCF Free Speech Radio for Central California. My name is Dan Yassin, and I'm a local anti-war and anti-empire activist. Mike Rhodes is at the control. We are in our 2016 Winter Pledge Drive. We need your support. Please call 1-800-439-5732, or you can go to www.kpfa.org or www.kfcf.org and pledge online. KFCF is completely listener-sponsored and supported. We receive no money from the government or from underwriting sources. This is our 40th year of bringing great community radio programming to Central California. Please call 1-800-439-5732 or go online at www.kpfa.org or www.kfcf.org. KFCF is been on air for over 40 years. Every third Wednesday from 3 to 3:30, I interview authors, scholars, bloggers, columnists, and activists who help us look at our world through the prism of American imperialism. On the show, we talk about U.S. foreign and domestic policies and the actions of the military, industrial, governmental surveillance complex. These actions have severe consequences not only for the people here in America, but also for the people in other countries. To create a better, humane, and a compassionate world, we must first understand what is being done in our name, and we must always be willing to stand up, speak out, and speak truth to empire. Today we have Christopher Bolin on telephone with us. Hello, Christopher.
Hello, Dan. Nice to be with you.
Thank you for being my guest on the show. Christopher Bolin was born in an educated middle-class family in Chicago and grew up during the 60s in suburban Schaumburg, Illinois. After graduating from high school, Christopher traveled extensively in Europe and the Middle East. For several winters, he lived and studied Middle Eastern history and Semitic languages at the University of Oslo. Christopher returned to the United States in the late 70s and began studies at the University of California at Davis. He has a degree in history from UC Santa Cruz. His emphasis was on Palestine-Israel. Christopher is an independent investigative journalist. He has investigated, researched, and written extensively about the events of 9/11. His website is bolin.com. That's B-O-L-L-Y-N.com. I'm delighted to announce that Christopher Bolin will be speaking at the Ramada Inn at 324 East Shaw Avenue in Fresno on Saturday, February 20th at 6 p.m. The suggested donation is $9.11. Christopher, in August of 2006, you were attacked in your home in Hoffman Estates, Illinois, by a heavily armed three-man team of undercover police that had been prowling around your house for several days in a row. Tell us about that incident and its consequences.
Yeah, we had not been living in our home because we had been surrounded by people who had been informing the FBI. At least that's what they told us, and I have no reason to doubt it. There were four people. So we had lived in Europe, and I came back. I was called back to the United States on assignment from my newspaper in Washington, and I had spent the springtime, the late winter and springtime, out in Utah meeting with Professor Stephen Jones and discussing his analysis of the presence of thermite, evidence of thermite in the dust of the World Trade Center. And then I went out to UC Santa Cruz or UC Davis and met with Professor Thomas Cahill, who had analyzed the smoke from the World Trade Center, in which they had found extremely large numbers of nanoparticles in the smoke, which was indicative. This is the smoke that rose from the rubble, which indicates that there were that underneath the rubble, iron and other metals were boiling. This is under the rubble of the World Trade Center. For 3 months after 9/11, iron was boiling. That's very hot. And so I came back. We finally returned to our home with some reluctance in August of 2006. And about a week after we got home, there was a lot of police activity around my house. They had been surveilling me. And then this three-man crew was driving around my house, my neighborhood, most unusual. Three men in a they were unmarked car, ununiformed people, but they were obviously armed with body armor and a lot of weapons, and I didn't know who they were. So when I saw them going around my house a couple times in the evening, I decided I should call 911. So I called that number, 911, and the police said they would send a uniformed officer to my house. But rather than a uniformed officer, this three-man crew came to my house, marched up my driveway, where they were confronted by my wife, who had been gardening, and my little 8-year-old daughter. And I looked out the window and saw these three men wearing blue jeans and navy blue or blue jean color body armor, and standing in my driveway, you know, talking to my wife. And I came out the door and I said, "Who are you? What agency are you with?" And they refused to identify themselves. And then I said, my brother was in the house. I said, "I need to go get my brother." And this is all, mind you, this is all on my property. This is on private property, in my front yard. And I turned to go get my brother, and I had only gone a few steps, and they tackled me. And one man kneeled on my head, on my temple, a 200-pound man kneeling on my temple for a little while. Another man was sitting on my back, holding me down. My right arm was trapped under my body, and my left hand was in a handcuff. And in that position, I felt that they put something against my back. I felt this cold metal device against my skin on my back. And then I got the full drive stun, it's called, from the taser device. It's 50,000 volts directly applied to my back. And that was pretty outrageous. And then when they pulled me up off the ground and stood me up, I saw that there were seven police cars that suddenly materialized in my front yard. And mind you, the police department is several miles away from my house, but these police had been all waiting around, parked, you know, about 100 meters, 200 meters away from my house. And so as soon as this undercover crew did their job on me, all these police cars just suddenly descended on my house. And they stood me up, and my wife was there, my daughter, and my son had showed up, I said, you know, why are you arresting me? What charges are you arresting me on? And they wouldn't answer that either. They just took me away from my house, and then they put me in. They took me to the cell, to their police station, where there was a lot of. When I got to the police station, there were 12 police officers waiting there with rubber gloves on, and I think they intended to do something to me, but I told them I was a journalist and I would write about whatever they did. So that was that. And finally, I was given a police report a couple days later in which I was charged with assaulting these officers, these men who were unidentified, and with resisting their arrest. Mind you, at no point had they identified themselves as police. And, you know, these are just three men that marched up my driveway.
Well, let's move on to the crime of 9/11. Before we talk about the solution, let's talk about the narrative that was propagated by our government with the help of mainstream media. You and many 9/11 truthers have written about the many holes in that narrative. Tell us about some scientific facts that do not support that narrative.
Okay, well, you know, there's a couple basic things. One of the most important things is that we're told by the government in these reports that the buildings collapsed due to burning jet fuel and fires that caused the structures to fail. These are steel-framed high-rise towers. First of all, never in history has a high-rise steel-framed tower collapsed due to fire. That's never happened before. On September 11th, that happened to three buildings. Secondly, all three towers fell at what's called free fall speed. They fell as fast or faster than an object would fall in the, you know, at free fall, falling from that 400 meters. So those two things are, that's clearly indicative that something funny is going on, because the most of the buildings, of course, were cold, and that cold structure would have resisted the free fall of anything. So that was the most clear evidence. And then there was also this abundant evidence of explosives or explosions at the World Trade Center, because the material from the building was being thrown sideways, laterally, at great speeds with great force. That indicates that there was intense pressure in the core of the building that was throwing this out. And then, of course, there was eyewitness and video evidence of explosive squibs, they're called, occurring in the building below the impact zone as the building began to fall. And these are explosions that are going off and throwing debris out the side of the building like a jet. And, that's the gist of it. The evidence indicates that the buildings were exploded. And then, as I said, in 2006, I was working with Professor Jones, because there was, of course, also evidence of molten iron falling from the east tower, or the south tower, east corner, 81st floor. For about 7 minutes before that building came down, there was a cascade of molten iron that poured from the building. And this was several tons. One cubic meter of molten iron, I think, weighs 6.5 tons. So this was there was obviously a great deal of molten iron on the 81st floor. And that's important to understand, because molten iron is 1,500 degrees Celsius. And that means that the people who were trapped above these crash sites, at least in the South Tower, were being exposed to extremely hot temperatures, which is, of course, why so many of them jumped, because they chose to jump and end their lives rather than stay in the building and be cooked alive.
Okay, tell us about the consequences of 9/11, or in other words, how did our government use the event?
Yeah, well, right away, before the buildings even collapsed on 9/11, Ehud Barak, the Israeli former prime minister and defense minister, was on British TV, BBC World, which is the largest English-speaking television network in the world. And he said that the world will never be the same from today on. And he went on to say that the Israelis obviously, suspected that Osama bin Laden was responsible. And even if Osama bin Laden wasn't responsible, Ehud Barak said now is the time for the United States to begin an operational, concrete war on terror, which was exactly what George Bush began. This began what the Israeli prime minister said became the accepted narrative. And, you know, in October of 2001, the United States began its pre-planned invasion of Afghanistan. And as we now know, the project for the war on terror included 7 countries in 5 years. And it is to end with taking on Iran. So this war on terror is an Israeli construct. The war on terror is something that was first articulated by the Netanyahu Institute in Israel in 1979. And the attack at the World Trade Center was meant to be the event that kickstarted that war on terror. And here we are now, more than 14 years later, still engaged in the same undeclared wars in the Middle East, which served no American strategic interest in any way. These are completely illegal and criminal wars, the one in Iraq, the one in Afghanistan, the one in Somalia, the one in Yemen. You know, there's a whole list of them. And this is what has been, you know, this is where America has been put. We've been put into this fraudulent terrorist war on terror. It's terroristic, actually. And we're fighting this war for the benefit of the state of Israel. But it's really not in Israel's best interest either. But these psychopaths that control the Israeli state, Benjamin Netanyahu primarily and all of his cronies, you know, they found a way to deceive the United States into fighting an Israeli war, an Israeli Zionist war agenda. That's what we're doing.
You're listening to Speaking Truth to Empire on 88.1 KFCF Free Speech Radio for Central California. We are speaking with author and independent investigative journalist Christopher Boland. Many of our listeners are opposed to all wars. We want to end all wars, and I'm part of Peace Fresno, and I believe in that also. So I'd like for us for you to explain to us how solving 9/11 will end the war that you talk about, the war on terror.
Oh, that's very good. Well, Solving 9/11 is actually the title of my book, Solving 9/11, The Deception That Changed the World, and a companion volume, Solving 9/11, The Original Articles. And people don't understand, but the 9/11 crime, the atrocity of 9/11, was not treated as a crime. It was not investigated as a crime. It was considered, after they struck the Pentagon, the Bush administration claimed that it was an act of war waged by these 19 hijackers and their supporters. And then, based on that conclusion, the United States was taken to war. And so the Department of Justice investigation that should have happened was managed by a man named Michael Chertoff. He's an Israeli national, the son of a Mossad agent. He was the assistant attorney general of the United States at the time, and John Ashcroft gave him the portfolio to investigate the crimes of 9/11. But there was no investigation, as I said. So rather than investigate the crime, they simply facilitated the destruction of the evidence. All of the steel from the World Trade Center, and all of the aircraft parts that they found, and all of the videos that were confiscated from surrounding businesses, all of the evidence was treated by the FBI. And rather than producing the evidence to support the official narrative that this was done by 19 Arabs and Osama bin Laden, they destroyed the evidence. So 9/11 must be one of the biggest crimes in the history of the world that has not been investigated. Furthermore, there were 3,000 people who died, and the wrongful death suits were all being handled by one judge in New York City named Alvin K. Hellerstein. And there was, every single case was settled out of court, one by one, in what I call a judicial war of attrition. So there was no discovery, no legal process for discovery. So, 9/11 has never been investigated. So I began in the very beginning as an investigative journalist working for a paper in Washington, D.C., I began investigating 9/11. And there were two things that struck me, at the very beginning that were being omitted from the mainstream media. This was the evidence of explosives in the Twin Towers, and also the evidence of Israeli involvement in the crime itself. And I began investigating with the hypothesis that the crimes of 9/11 were a false flag attack that had been organized and engineered by Israeli military intelligence. And over a period of 12 years, I found that at every single critical juncture of the 9/11 saga, you find an Israeli national or a devoted supporter of the State of Israel in the key position to make the decisions to facilitate the deception. So when you understand that the a crime of 9/11, the atrocity of 9/11, is a hoax. It was a fraud. It's a hoax in that we've been told that this was a Muslim crime committed by 19 Arabs, when in fact it was engineered and carried out by Israeli military intelligence. So when you understand that, and when you understand that the war on terror is an Israeli construct that has been promoted by Netanyahu since 1979, then you can understand that solving the crime of 9/11, exposing the people behind it, as my book does, means that the war on terror itself is a fraud. So that means that the United States, our military and our nation, have been deceived about everything involving 9/11 and the war on terror, which should be some relief to people, because when you understand that there is no real reason for us to be at war with the Islamic world or with the Muslim world, there's no reason for us to be engaged in war after war after war around the Middle East and North Africa, then you can see that when we identify the real culprits, then it's a small group of Zionist men, Israeli men, who have a lot of power in the United States. But when you understand that, you understand that the true nature of the problem. And that means that the war on terror is effectively over, for at least the person who understands that, because you will be relieved of your fears and you will be relieved of your angst that people have when they think about where the United States is going today. It's all a fraud. It's all a fraud, just like the Wizard of Oz.
Okay, you have written that the U.S. Congress and both Bush and Obama administration have failed to conduct a criminal investigation that you mentioned earlier of the crime of 9/11, just like the Johnson administration's failure to conduct a proper investigation of the Kennedy assassination. And of course, you have accused our government of engaging in criminal deception and using lies to take us into foreign wars. So my question is, if they are complicit, why would they investigate themselves? Because you're asking them to investigate a crime that they are complicit in themselves. So give us a reason why would they investigate it.
No, they haven't investigated it. The mainstream media, the controlled media in this country, which is, you know, most of the media in this country is owned by something like six companies. A half dozen companies control almost all the media in this country. And also the government have not investigated 9/11 at all. And they have completely failed for 14 years to even address the evidence of what happened on 9/11. Rather than investigate the crime, they gave us, as I said, a false narrative from the beginning. And that narrative was used to take us to war. They're not going to investigate themselves. That's for sure. And as long as this, what this indicates is that the media and the government in this country are controlled by the same people who carried out 9/11. That's very important to understand, because that gives you an indication of how serious our political predicament is in this nation. The people who carried out 9/11 control both the media and the government. That's logically the only reason why the government and media will not investigate what really happened on 9/11, because they are protecting the culprits who carried out the crime itself. So that's where we're at. How we can get these crimes investigated and prosecuted by the government, it won't happen until there is a change in the government and these guilty parties are exposed and removed and prosecuted. We do not have the mechanism in this country to do that. Some people think that a local county sheriff, for example, will take on the whole federal administration and the federal government and the whole situation, but that's highly unlikely. I don't see how that's possible, because what needs to happen is people like George Bush and Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld and Michael Chertoff and Alvin K. Hellerstein, the whole rotten crew, have to be rounded up basically simultaneously and interrogated, aggressively interrogated, I would say, and we need to find out who's behind all of this criminal activity. That would mean basically a revolution in this country. That would be a revolution in that it would be a complete turnabout, and we would have a whole new leadership in this country. Well, that has never happened. And that would, I don't know how that would happen. I can only imagine that could happen perhaps if there were a military coup d'etat, such as what happened in places like Greece and South America from time to time. But I don't see how we are going to be able to prosecute these people. So what I'm doing is I'm trying to spread awareness of, you know, understanding of what happened on 9/11, hoping that at some point we get enough people understanding what happened, you know, and then from there, the critical mass will have reached such a level, 5-10% of the people in this country understanding that we've been lied to, then something can happen.
Christopher,
but given the current, yeah.
Yes, thank you for your time, and I'm going to announce that event here, that you will be here on Saturday, February 20th in Fresno at the Ramada Inn at 324 East Shaw Avenue, and people are welcome to come and attend. The suggested donation is $9.11, and thank you for being my guest on the show.
Thank you very much, Dan, and my website is bollin.com, bollyn.com. Thank you very much.
Thank you.